Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Autopod Decepticast. Wait a minute. Have I forgotten how to do this intro?
Wow. 133 episodes.
I thought this was 132.
No, the Flint.
No, Lattice. I've got it figured out, Ryan. That's not the real Aaron. That's a replicated Aaron. The real Aaron's in a crevice somewhere between his house and your house.
Laying just, all splayed.
Just dodging crystals. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Autopod Decepticast, your bi-weekly podcast delivering an episode-by-episode breakdown of the original G1 series. This is your episode number 133, and today we're going to be covering episode 27, A Prime Problem. And, hey guys, remember that time I was a really punk-ass teenager and my mom was in a mental hospital and I was chased through the LA River on my motorcycle by a guy driving a tractor trailer and Terminator 2, introduce yourselves.
I'd say two-thirds of that is actually true. Can you figure out which two-thirds
Why don't
of it
you
are
tell
true?
Me which two-thirds?
I would say you were a punk-ass teenager and your mom probably was in a mental institution at some point.
I hope she listens.
That was Caleb. I'm Ryan. And boy, these intros are getting thin on the ground.
Well, life is tough right now, guys. Why do you got to judge me?
That's kind of my point on the podcast.
There's a lot of... We've got Ryan and me together in a room. Caleb, literally phoning it in. You want to go into that at all?
Yeah, sure.
Proceed.
So... I am waiting on COVID test results. I should not jump to conclusions, but I feel like it's probably a very small chance that I'll test positive. But in a nutshell, my kid went to a day camp last week, and the camp said that a student at the camp was in contact with a kid that was not a camp attendee. A week before that has tested positive. So no one tested positive at the camp, but someone tested positive that had been in contact with someone that attended the camp. Okay. And so me and my wife are getting tested just to be completely, to make sure that we're not having the COVID.
So we're keeping you as far away from us as possible.
Caleb is over at his grandmother's house at Moonbase 1, and we actually are in Moonbase 2, a.k.a. my basement.
Yeah. Wow. We've got so many satellite
It's almost
recording studios
a bunker,
now.
Actually. I dolled it up a little bit, but...
I wish we could show the listener Ryan's basement, because it is one of the wonders of the world, not of the natural world.
I don't feel like that was a compliment.
Well, it's one of my favorite places. It's really cool, but... I could also see how people would be scared by it.
I haven't been down in this basement in years. What's up? What's so interesting about it?
To me, it's got all the random stuff he's collected over the years. It's just vintage lamps and statues and knights. There's the velvet painting I bought him so many years ago. No less than 3 cathode tube television
sets. There's like 5 of them in here.
Video game systems dating back to the Atari 2600.
Well, most of those are upstairs in the good, because I play them.
Uh-huh.
There's some broken ones down here.
It does also have a bit of a ransacked apartment kind of feel to it.
Like if you lived in a crack den.
Or if you were living with a hoarder.
If I was location scouting for a crack house, this downstairs basement would be a good spot. I'd pay Ryan to use it.
Give me
what if you were a location scout for that show about hoarders?
It's not that bad.
It's not as bad as those shows, but I could see in 10 years that it would...
Something to strive for, Ryan.
I am not a hoarder. I maintain.
You are not.
which is what they say about themselves.
All the people on those hoarder shows are in their 50s and 60s. You never have the 40-year-old hoarder.
I have hoarding
tendencies.
So I feel
like this is, I feel like this is the starter kit here before me.
I do have tendencies because I never want to get rid of anything, because inevitably I will think of a use for it like a year after it's gone, and then I'm pissed off.
Is that some kind of sequel to the 40-year-old virgin? We could write the
60-year-old hoarder,
the 40-year-old version.
The what?
The other thing about hoarding, it's not just that I don't necessarily like to throw things away either. It's not necessarily, this just did become the Ryan judgment hour.
I know. It's not that you. I'm just pissed off that I'm not there and I'm coming on too strong. I'm being too mean to Ryan.
It's not just that you a person would keep everything on those hoarder shows. I think it's also kind of how they keep it.
I mean, I don't have garbage. I don't keep garbage like most of those do.
That's the truth. No, I got a guy that lives two doors down from me, and actually he doesn't live there anymore, but he...
Because by orders of the state.
Yeah, he's actually going... He has a bench trial next month for animal cruelty. But,
oh, God.
And I don't know if you want to hear about that part.
I do not.
Okay, I won't tell you about that part. But he was a true-on hoarder. Like, he... his house was completely full of stuff to the point where I guess he has some sort of income where he doesn't have to work. And his pattern is he buys a house. He keeps buying stuff. He fills up that house until he can't occupy it anymore. And then he gets a new house and basically abandons that one, still owns it but doesn't pay the bills or anything on it. And then he just moves to another house. I'm saying he has some sort of income. I don't know what that is, but I do not think he is employed. He has some sort of amount. He has some money somehow. I don't know.
How do I get that gig?
I don't know. I honestly, I don't even, I'm not sure, but he bought a boat and it sat there. He bought it brand new and it sat there for like 5 years and was never used.
Did he use it as a hoarding? What, did he start hoarding stuff in the boat? You go in the cabin and magazines and...
I like the idea that you think it's like a big house, like a big houseboat with a cabin.
Oh, is it more like a canoe?
It's just like a bass boat. Yeah, it's just like a bass boat. Like a
I don't think
boat.
You know what boats are.
Yeah. He went from a yacht.
I know.
Like a yacht. So it's what, like a canoe? is it a kayak?
An inner tube.
It's an inner tube. Yeah. Is it a torpedo? No, but I guess real quick, he would buy a car, it would get a flat, and so he did not want to go get the flat fixed, so he would just buy another car. So he ended up having like three cars in his driveway that were just because they had a flat tire, and then they would just the car would just ruin from sitting out there.
Good Lord.
And anyway, no,
it's
Ryan,
such weird behavior.
Ryan, you've got a lot of work to do to get to this guy's status, because. That would seem exhausting to me.
I know that the thing about Ryan, I know he'll never be that hoarder where when the people finally have their moment with him, the intervention, and he accepts it, that when they start cleaning out his house, you'll find just dead cats underneath a stack of old New York posts.
Well, do you want me to tell you about the...
No! I already said no.
That's what I saw on the show, Hoarders. There was seen at least one where they found more than one carcass.
Ryan, take off your headphones.
No, just let's move on.
Okay. Hey, we'll transition right off this.
Fuck, that's depressing as fuck.
Let's get off this depressing topic and go to a more uplifting topic. Alcoholism.
Okay.
Ryan. Yes. Do you have a cocktail of the week for me?
Yeah, I need it.
I hope the word crevice is in it.
I can't tell if he brought all the makings down here, but I think he still has to pour it. Yeah, there's a mason jar with some sort of pink frothy liquid. That's got to be from inside him. And I don't, he's got his fancy tiki ice container.
Ah, fuck. This is like that. That's like my favorite part of the whole show, and I'm not there to enjoy it.
Oh, he's pouring. Oh, he's pouring his man milk into
so
a
much.
Blender.
If I get the test results while we're on this, while we're talking, I'm gonna immediately get in my car and start driving.
Yeah, do it. Here. That'd be awesome.
If the results are negative, I should
oh, Caleb, I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, I got the test results. He's got the blender in his basement.
Yes.
Yes.
He has the whole cocktail making setup in his basement.
Does he have a bar down there?
He doesn't have a bar. He brought a little travel bag with all the ingredients.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's his.
Yeah, okay, he's pouring. It's frothy. It's.
Yeah.
Ryan, what is this?
This is the the Zombie Prime.
Ooh, I like the name.
Hold it up so I can see it. Ooh, that is awesome looking.
It is. It's just in the book. It's just the zombie. Page 138. It says about 1 cup of coconut milk, 2 jiggers of cognac, 1 jigger of dark rum, 1 jigger of grenadine or maraschino cherry juice, 2 to 3 dashes of Angostura bitters. Put into a shaker with lots of finely cracked ice. Shake hard and turn all into small chilled goblets. I used a blender.
I like that you did that.
Yeah, we heard it.
Putting your own twist on it. Okay, cheers. Let's make sure Caleb sees us drinking it together.
Yeah, that's about the tepid reaction this deserves. Just this, huh.
All the work, it really? Looks, as cool as it looks, there's not a lot of flavor.
No, there isn't.
And the flavor that's there has a, I don't want to say antiseptic isn't the right word. It's as if, but it is as if you somehow made a drink out of Tums.
Okay. It's not great. So this is a miss.
Would it be good for as an antacid? Be good
it's chalky.
Chalky.
Which must be the coconut milk. That's the only thing it could be.
I'm going to drink it. Oh, it's actually getting better the more I drink it. I don't know if that's psychological or.
Maybe you just hit a layer of chalk.
Okay.
Yeah. They're not all winners.
Well, at least we have a picture of Caleb with the cocktail glasses. That's the positive thing that came out of this. Oh, well, okay, what do we got going on? Any news? We're recording right now before our interview with Flint Dilly, but the listener will have heard the interview before they listen to this episode.
Through the magic of podcasts.
Right?
I should have just been like, what a great episode. Man, it was so awesome to meet Flint Dilly. That was such a great interview.
We've met him before.
I mean, yeah.
Some of us met him in a bathroom. Some of us met him at a...
I didn't meet him in the bathroom. I just saw him in the bathroom and followed him out.
I interrupted a nice, pleasant drink he was having with fellow Transformers G.I. Joe writer Buzz Dixon in TFCon LA.
Hey, guys. I know who you are.
They were very sweet. I talked to them for about 5 minutes, and I wasn't paying attention to my surroundings at all. I'd been drinking. And I had a huge backpack on because I was carrying lots of Autopod Decepticast merch. And
it was full of booze.
And I didn't realize until I was done with the conversation to walk away from the table, my backpack was totally pressing into people at another table behind me. I was that guy.
Well, they should have said something, you know?
But no, it is very exciting that we're going to get to talk to Flint. We had the opportunity to talk to Ron Friedman, Dilly.
Mm-hmm.
We're closing out the movie writer duo-fecta. Is that what we'll call this?
I hope not.
Who's our next target? Buzz?
We have a target. Buzz makes
Nelson,
sense.
I'm going to attempt to get an interview with Ed Frugé.
Oh, you know, Vince DiCola would be great.
Yeah.
I'd be down for Vince. Vince E.
Yeah. All right, maybe we can go for that.
Is Ed Frugé the other guy, or the guy that was a collaborator with Vince DiCola?
Yeah, on the movie and in other things, yeah.
Has that crazy website with those crazy commercials, those ads that he did.
Maybe we can get them both.
That would be cool.
2 for 1.
Yeah, that would be pretty badass.
I like that idea. Either or.
You guys can do that episode.
Ryan's out.
Why? But we're gonna do an episode. We're gonna have, if we do that interview, we're gonna have a segment that where they work with us to do Is This Music on You.
Great.
And we'll have them like participate.
What a treat that would be for them and me.
Yeah, it would.
That was a joke for two people.
Yeah. Well, there's two people.
I think a lot of people like Is This Music. I don't think
I love it. I need to do another Is This Music segment with you. Yeah. I have a playlist on my iTunes that is called Is This Music, and when I hear weird stuff, I put it on there for you.
Okay.
I need you. You like it.
He loves to talk about things he hates.
Yeah. I guess we can say that the Flint Dilly interview went very, very well.
We'll go with that. Okay. last episode recap is fucking Enter the Nightbird. You know the fucking episode.
Spent 6 minutes preparing for this episode. He did.
So join us right now as we discuss episode 27, season 2, A Prime Problem, written by Dick Robbins and Bryce Malick, and animated by
an unknown studio.
Oh, Ryan, if you could put like an echo effect on that, that'd be great.
So how is that possible? I mean, how does that...
Because... Why... That's not done in-house. They farm the animation out to different studios and give them the script, you know, and like, so if it's not recorded somewhere, like by Sunbow, nobody would ever know what studio they used for what episode. So this one is just unknown.
But it's definitely not Acom. We can just tell that off the bat. It's much better quality.
The style feels somewhere between Toei and Acom.
That's what I had a note about.
There is some good stuff about it. There's some things they do that I don't think we've seen in other episodes.
They did a lot of really cool lighting stuff, like the shimmering auras, and there was a lot of light effects in this one.
There was also a lot of fully animated sequences.
Yeah, where the background moved and everything.
They seem to have their color under control, that's for sure.
Yeah.
There's a few missed colors, but that's always in everything.
Their models jumped around a little bit, but it did sort of feel like a mix of the two. It had that Acom Hanna-Barbera, but the Toei dynamic style and, you know, just
non-shittiness.
More experiments with the animation.
It's just weird to think. It makes sense, but it is interesting to think that, you know, it's an industry. They're busy. They're working to get stuff put out, and something as simple as who did the animation is kind of lost.
Well, that's why they're busy. They have to do, you know, 5 episodes a week for like 3 months.
Jesus. Yeah.
Well, let's get into it.
Okay.
We open up with what seems like an earthquake. The earth splitting deep ravines and a smoldering orange fumes lifting from the earth's crevasse.
It's that nerd rumble.
Is it?
It's not.
Armageddon.
Oh.
It's not Armageddon. The Decepticons are behind it, guys. We see Meggie, Soundy, and Screamy standing watch at the ravine. They've picked up on some rare energy detected by their Earth scanners. Do they mean their eyes?
I assume they meant scanners that can penetrate the Earth. I don't know. It was a weird line. As always, Starscream is a very poor scientist. He's just like, I'll go down there.
He very impetuously wants to jump in, drink that milkshake right up. But Megatron wants him to chill the fuck out on that because this shit could be unstable.
He's as bad as those fuckers in Prometheus.
Soundwave sends out the Auto Scout, something we've never seen before and will never see again.
It's very cute. It's so cute. I don't know why they chose to make it flop out on the ground like a dead fish and then transform. That was weird.
I like it. I feel sad but also funny when it picks off that crystal and explodes.
Corlornium crystals, which I looked it up and Corlornium's not real.
Okay, these crystals.
Yeah.
Megatron says they're the most powerful source of energy in the solar system.
Yeah.
But the ruby crystals of Burma are supposed to be the most powerful source of energy on Earth. Which is it?
Every third episode has a new, most rare, most powerful, most dangerous energy source.
I think he puts the modifier in there and unstable. So, like, they're super powerful but super unstable as opposed to other forms of energy, I think, is the implication.
I think you're giving him too much credit, but I fine.
Because he can't even harness the energy. He's just using it as a big trap.
That's true. Head-to-head, ruby crystals versus these, what are they called? Colonium
Corlornium crystals? Corlornium crystals?
I think if he could have executed this plan right, the Corlornium crystals from a planning standpoint,
get into
but maybe we save that till the end. I don't know.
Fucking plan.
Hey, why didn't they call it the Decepti-Scout?
Yeah. I mean, it's automated, I guess, is why it's called the Auto Scout.
I think it's really cute. I think they should make a toy of it.
Yeah, totally.
Masterpiece.
There are third-party interpretations.
There is a... I mean, we'll get to it, but there is a... The helmet in this that comes with one of the, I think, masterpiece Megatrons.
Mm-hmm. It do. Auto Scout is in the abyss. These crystals, which I guess have always been here in the Earth, although they seem to grow really fast, so I don't know if they just sprung out. It's very unclear, but...
Starscream doesn't know what they are. He's a scientist.
He doesn't know what they are. He's told to step off.
Maybe he's a Christian scientist.
So he doesn't take aspirin when he has a headache?
Or went to school. He just calls himself a scientist.
So we're dealing, as Ryan said, with Corlonium Crystal's sun. This shit is the most rare, dangerous form of raw energy in the solar system. So dangerous. Let's just move on to another scheme, Megatron said. They are so deadly that the auto scout plucks one from the ground, explodes immediately.
I want to see it.
He looks so innocent.
I know.
I assume it's not sentient.
It's not sentient. Because they say it's programmed to blah, blah, blah.
The shimmering on the ground is very cool. And the shimmering effect that they layer over the Decepticons.
Mm-hmm. Pink. Oh, shit.
It plucks the crystal, it sparks, and electricity surges through its body, and then it explodes. So it's not immediate. It doesn't really ever explain how and why the crystals interact. They just say,
with circuit. No, I'm saying they just say that it interacts with circuitry and explodes.
Right, just in general. Megatron condescendingly explains to Starscream that these crystals are deadly to anything electronic. Don't be an idiot. Starscream has a thought. We should get Optimus Prime and the Autobots and shove them in this pit.
Yeah. Now I feel sorry for Soundwave, because if Megatron already knew that...
He just murdered one of his children.
Soundwave's like, oh, yeah.
That's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
I am actually now enjoying this drink.
Now the rest of mine.
Just it'll keep me away from your other booze. Okay, so Starscream's thought is, let's get all the Autobots, shove them in this pit. Megatron lets Starscream know that that's a simple-minded plot, because the real Optimus Prime would never fall for a trick like that.
Yeah, why not do something completely convoluted and ludicrous?
But this is where Megatron reveals a new temporary base of operations.
A fucking rocket disguised as a mountain. He's got more vacation homes than Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah. Ooh, it's an evergreen show.
When the rocket's flying in, it's very inconsistent how they animate this. I don't know if I'm supposed to believe that rock grows onto the mountain, or that somehow they're hot gluing stones and pebbles and rocks to the mountain to disguise it. But it is clearly a rockless rocket. As it's
descending
to the ground, at the very next shot, you can see it's coated in mountainous texture.
I think they
texture.
Just miscolored it when it was coming
maybe
in.
It's like maybe it's got like a chameleon skin, whatever, like it contacts.
That's a good idea.
But I like the...
Except why do they put caverns inside the rocket then?
Do they?
Yeah. Okay. We'll just pause and come back to that.
I didn't realize that.
So new temporary base of operations. And he's going to wait for the Autobots to show up, because they've no doubt detected the crystal energy. Guys, I smell a plot of cooking up here.
Like a whole mess of beans.
The Autobots show right up. They're all confused and impressed by the light show coming from the trenches in the earth. And Cliffjumper wants to, jump right down the cliff.
Yeah.
Scope it out. But Prime grabs his shoulder. He says, "You got to exercise caution, son. We got to take some readings. This could be dangerous."
"Take some readings first, Cliffjumper. The source of those lights could be dangerous."
"All the danger you can handle is already here, Floptimus Prime."
That's it.
It's
a weird
solid insult.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, it's the best.
No, it's good.
Because he believes Optimus Prime to be a flop, Ryan, don't you see?
Not his best work.
You got Screamy, the Seekies, the Flectos. They show up on the scene. They attack. The Seekers surround Optimus Prime, who dispatches them without haste.
With a plum. And then delivers a pretty cheeky little line of his own.
Yeah, I'm going to play that one. I like that.
"I'm sorry there are only three of you. Clobbering less than four Decepticons at a time is boring."
It's like, really, four? That's your magic number, Prime?
It's a pretty specific insult. It's
like, only four and above.
There's like a lot of building like to make the insult, but
it's too bad all of your sub teams are three or less. They should just make Prime fight all the combiners. Maybe that would satisfy his bloodlust. From inside,
now I guess I guess the Decepticons know now that they have to send at least 4 against him when he fights.
If they want him to have a good time.
Yeah, he's not saying that he wouldn't. Yeah, it's not that he won't fight.
I'll never send 4 against you, Prime. Always less, because I don't want you to have a good time.
from inside the ship, Soundwave ejects Laserbeak, who is a boss in this episode.
Oh, yeah, he kicks ass. He's also perennially the only one who can ever handle Prime.
Mm-hmm. And that is what we see here. Laserbeak exits the headquarters and fires on Optimus Prime and knocks him down the fucking cliff. To be clear, not the cliff that is covered in dangerous explosive reactive crystals, but some other cliff
just
that
there cliff.
Just happened to be around.
Listen,
here.
These mesas are rotten with cliffs.
Yeah, there's crevasses everywhere.
I mean, you know how it be in Portland. But Prime is dazed. He's kind of knocked out by that fall. And Laserbeak takes that opportunity to scan him, and he sends all of Prime's measurements to a master computer inside the Decepticon temporary base. The computer analyzes, synthesizes, and in the blink of an eye, it clones Optimus Prime's.
Your wordplay.
He should have just shot him while he was out.
Yeah, I mean,
some have argued that.
I know that his Megatron's plan is to kill all the Autobots at once, but it is a real. Oh. You need to be able to work on the fly, and the creepy way he talks about, I want pictures from all angles.
It wouldn't hurt to kill Prime, though. In fact, it would make
not
this
at
plan
all.
Better.
In fact, it would make the plan work, because he doesn't do anything right. with Prime.
I paused it here. You can see their ship has stalactites in it.
So maybe they just cut off a mountain and put boosters on it.
Could be.
They kind of want it to match. They like the aesthetic of the Ark.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like that.
That's the one cultural contribution the Autobots have made to the Transformers legacy. So the computer spits out a perfect replica of Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Completely indistinguishable from the real Prime, except Megatron is in control of this Optimus Prime. He puts on an iconic shower cap, which allows him to control this Prime imposter. Soundwave is all freaked out.
I know.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in Soundwave. I wrote down he reacts like a 3-year-old, but then I also said he reacts like an Autobot. And so I expect better from him.
I don't understand why he's surprised. How is he not in on the plan?
Megatron's been sitting here talking
about clones forever, though.
I don't know.
He's been
the machine says, like, clone complete or something. And then the door opens.
There's a big neon light that says Optimus Prime clone machine.
Not real Prime.
So, yeah, I'm disappointed in Soundwave here. He's smarter than that, and the only people that would normally fall for that would be a room full of Autobots.
The Decepticons love plots that involve Dr. Manhattan-style test chambers.
Yeah, there's a lot of chambers. That was very close to the chamber where he gets all the Decepticons' powers.
This machine's amazing.
Yeah, it seems like they could still keep using it
after this episode. Yeah, crank it out. It leads to some pretty existential issues, I think. It could.
For sure. The deceptive duplicate jumps out of the hidden headquarters and rejoins the battle below. After popping a few shots, the Seekers withdraw, and the Autobots are commanded by the fake Prime to return to base.
Why?
Yeah, if the Decepticons retreat, wouldn't you just continue your original investigation?
That's my point. Like, why not have the fake Prime lead them into the crevice now and explode them?
You could easily
credits. Do
that.
6 minutes in, we're done.
Then you wouldn't have all the hilarious hijinks back at the base.
They also handled that in the most Autobot-ass way possible.
Are completely necessary. Sure, Cliff Jumper, hop right down and investigate. Be sure to touch everything.
Anyway, they go back to base.
Yeah, they're back at the Ark.
I think they should have I think that the Decepticons should have played around with that clone Prime a little bit first and made him say silly stuff. And I mean, you could do
recorded it, put it on Twitter, get him canceled.
Yeah,
canceled by the left.
Okay.
Back at the Ark, Faux Prime is fiddling with the controls, as inept as my grandpa with an iPhone. Just kidding. My grandfather died in a POW camp in Poland.
Woo.
He's calling all his Autobot family the wrong name, just like my other grandpa who died in a magical world of his own creation.
And poop. died in poop. Anyway, yeah, it's so stupid. Like, Megatron doesn't know who Ironhide is.
Yeah, it's supposed to reflect that Megatron doesn't know the Autobots' names. And he needs to be more like me when I meet people and I forget their names. I'm always like,
hey, champ.
Right.
Looking good, sport. Hey, what's cooking, scout?
Or he could just do some fucking research and, you know, just maybe wait a week. Be like, the first part of my plan is to figure out who Ironhide is and Jazz and the rest. Spike and the team are starting to realize there's something very wrong with Optimus Prime.
It's so funny. I don't know why.
Artificial Optimus tries to reassure the team that he has a few literal screws loose from the fall, which no one saw him take.
Oh, yes.
But then an alarm goes off.
The outer perimeter alarm!
But all Autobots are already inside!
Yeah, that's the point of an alarm.
I had that note too. In the script, it's not like that. In the script, it says that the alarm is specifically meant, which is the dumb, even dumber, to alert when Autobots are approaching. And I'm like, what is the possible use of this alarm?
It's just always going off when they're going out for breaks.
They've got no alarm for when, like, Laserbeak flies into the base, but they've set up an alarm when Autobots approach.
Yes.
Jesus.
I can't believe how much worse this is getting. Well, Jazz punches up an image from their ring that they have. At least they've got a ring. Mm-hmm. And who the fuck is this? Optimus Prime? Huh? What?
Two of them.
The counterfeit commander says, let him in. He's obviously a Decepticon.
So let him in.
We're going to string that bitch up. And that's where we go to commercial.
I can't wait till we get to the tests.
They're coming sooner than later.
I want to make sure to address what Prime, the real Prime, says in his process of deduction in a minute.
Okay, we go to commercial.
Before the real Prime gets blasted, Ironhide, he steps in front and keeps the Autobots from murdering their leader. No shooting till we figure this shit out.
Holding a huge industrial hair dryer.
Well, you gotta get that hawk going somehow or another. Mm-hmm. Prime is oblivious of the situation that the rest of the Autobots are dealing with. He starts to explain, you see, I fell into a ravine, Laserbeak was there, and who the fuck are you? as the other Prime is revealed. They're indistinguishable. Even Teletran 1 can't tell them apart. The Autobots must set up a series of challenges to make the call. I'm pausing at 8:32 for a second. That is some particularly interesting, nice shine effects mm-hmm. that they added.
Found it interesting when Prime says, I forget what he says right up before it, but he says, which means I'm an imposter.
What's going on? Is this some kind of game?
I'm afraid it's no game. He says he's Optimus Prime.
Which would mean that I'm an imposter.
Yeah, he does say that. So
that's the implication.
Prime comes to, like, he, you know, I know what he's doing, but the way you can hear it is like, which means I'm an imposter. So I'm thinking it's possible after he says that, he might be like, shoot me. Like, he thinks he's the imposter.
I will say, Prime, the real Prime in this, it does nothing, really. Like, has no contribution, doesn't take any actions, just passive, and everything happens to him. It's very disappointing.
I can't believe he agrees to all these games.
Yeah, and they never even do the obvious thing, which is, you know, ask
what's
some
my name?
Personal questions. Yeah, which one do you suspect? Maybe the fucker who doesn't know who Bumblebee is.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think that Windcharger and Spike and Ironhide, everybody that just experienced the ineptness of the other Prime, their sensors would be going off.
They have no
right now.
Object permanence isn't the right term, but like they don't remember any. They have the intergrade amnesia where they can make no long-term memories.
So instead of an obvious feat, we have to do this series of Rube Goldberg-style ricochet shooting tests.
Of which only one of them does. The other one just gets hit with a rock and picks it up. And that, then I guess the test is over. What at?
They're supposed to do ricochet, I don't remember how many times, three times.
It's like three times.
And hit an X that's on a rock in the mountain.
I don't know how lasers ricochet.
And also...
Could we draw a diagram of what they're supposed to do and
maybe
post it on the website?
I mean, well, you're saying, would you draw it? One is what you
you draw it, Caleb.
I can do it. I'll do it.
I'll do it right now.
No, I'll do it later, but I'll make a note because I do want to do it, and I'll put it out there and maybe put it on Twitter or something.
So is the insinuation that Optimus Prime is some kind of
sharpshooter,
old Western-style sharpshooty master?
Like Annie Oakley?
Yeah. Just taking it back to Deadwood. And
it's also, Teletran 1 told you they're identical. Theoretically, it means they have identical abilities.
Right.
The only thing not identical is their memories, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, as discussed, the shot ricochets, some rocks fall on the real Prime, which is also a pointless bit of drama. He gets back up very quickly and shakes that off.
Test done.
Also, nice shooting Megatron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Give some mad props. He's even doing it remotely.
Yeah.
So then the only obvious other course of action... is a race.
Yep, let's have a race. We have to have a race
to the flats and back. Much
they
like
even transform the same. Now it would be interesting if Megatron could not figure out how to remotely transform the clone Optimus, and what would that struggle
and would
like?
He make excuses, you know, the fall.
I'm glad you paused it here at 10:38, Aaron, because once again we see Trailbreaker as an itty bitty waist.
Yes.
I don't know that's about.
His legs come together.
I mean, for a huge ass truck, it's just interesting. Yeah.
He got that gap though, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the thigh gap.
The race is on to the flats and back. Much like the Autobot run, a cloud of speed induced dust keeps anyone from seeing who the winner is.
Yeah, the dust arrives before they do, somehow. And what took you so long? I don't know. My name's Spike, and I don't know who won.
Those are some of the cartoonish elements that feel ACOM-y to
well,
me.
We had two tests. I guess we're done. We can't figure it out.
We're just all going to hang out together with our two dads. So we're back at the base. The Autobots are sad that their tests were unable to deduce the real Prime, but there's no time for that because Teletran has reported that energy that they abandoned back at the crevasse is getting extra serious, guys. The crystals have grown to huge proportions. And I forgot all about this thing that was happening.
And it's even more convoluted because Megatron is creating those false, or like, it's not clear if they're false readings or if he's actually feeding energy to these things to make them larger.
Oh, I don't even know where you got that.
He says it.
Oh, really?
He says the Teletran 1 is like misinterpreting the readings just the way I hoped he would. He's like, they're not really increasing in power or something.
I completely missed that.
Yeah, it's in there and dumb. And then Ironhide takes command.
Yeah, because of the Prime confusion, Ironhide is now the leader.
Which, shouldn't it be Jazz?
And he's going to take everybody back to the canyon.
The crevasse.
If you will.
The Autobot chain minutes of command is murky.
'Tis true. They march in, immediately fired on by the Decepticons, and a battle breaks out. Back at the temporary base, Starscream is gloating about their impending victory, but first Megatron explains that Pretendimus Prime must destroy a Decepticon to truly... you know, gain the Autobots' confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And Starscream agrees that that's a really good idea. You're going to have to use some trusted warrior, somebody like Starscream?
I feel like Megatron really purposefully makes Starscream misunderstand what he's
sure
going to do.
Oh, you think?
He's never liked to fuck with Starscream, guys. Come on.
So yeah, he says that Starscream is gonna be the one to get shot and blown up by Prime, and Starscream's like, "Peace, I'm out. Yeah. No way, man."
Yeah, Starscream cowardly just ditches the scene, and we send Laserbeak out after him.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them battle it out a bit, and Spike and Windcharger notice what's happening, and they notice that they both emerged from a hole in this rocket ship shaped mountain that's right next to the battleground.
Laserbeak in this episode, and in general, is like the Carly of the Decepticons. Just super capable. Like, in this one, he kicks Starscream's ass and brings him back to the base.
Just hauls him back, drag.
So, arguably the second most powerful Decepticon.
Yeah. The fight sequence between them is really cool.
Yeah, it's
very stylistic, the way Starscream fired his null rays from robot mode, and the way Laserbeak fired on him and caused the disturbance on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The
explosion. It was very cool.
Laserbeak takes down Starscream, drags him back to the mountain with Spike and Chargy sneaking in just in time to hear the whole plan that Megatron has going on.
You may have a note about this, but what is the fake Prime doing while Megatron is handling all this shit with Starscream? Is it just standing immobile, not talking?
Prime? What's wrong with him?
Meanwhile, the Autobots are like, I still don't know which one is the real Prime.
Yeah, exactly. They would not. That's not enough to make them clear.
I thought
maybe it has an autopilot mode.
What would that be?
I don't know. It just walks in circles like an NPC in a video game.
It's got preloaded comments that it makes.
Bumblebee, come over here.
Freedom.
Megatron's behind this.
Yeah. Transform and roll out. King us roll out.
The thought that Megatron would accidentally leave the helmet on and is just saying his whole plan for Optimus Prime's voice.
And they're still like, well, I don't know who is the real one. I liked the idea that he just like handed the helmet off to like Rumble, and Rumble's just in control. How crazy that would be.
And then you flash over to the real Prime and he's just smashing his fists in the ground.
Or he's like he's going, like, I'm Optimus like Prime. Boop, boop, doop, doop.
I think there's a good skit in the making here. Laserbeak drags Starscream back to the mountain. We know that.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I got scenarios in my head where, like, Laserbeak has on the helmet and Optimus is just like squawking.
Trying to fly.
Flapping his arms. I don't know. I mean, stop while I'm ahead.
Megatron explains to Starscream that he's not going to fucking kill him, that he's going to make a clone out of him. And soon that clone is going to enter the fray and complete this ruse that they have here, because the fake Prime is going to kill the fake Starscream. Then the Autobots are going to follow him into the crystal minefield. Spike and Windcharger try to make an exit as the felonious Starscream clone makes its way out of the mountain, but they're chased down by Laserbeak. Windcharger appears to be knocked down into that Death Valley, but Spike is brought back to Megatron, and now it's commercial time. Again, a lot of cool effects as
the light effects.
The clones are created. Starscream's helmet matches Megatron, so that's cute.
Yeah, it says on the TF Wiki, in order to complete the set with the, I think it's the MP36 Megatron, to completely get this playset, you'd have to get like an MP Star, two MP Starscreams, another MP Prime, and another Megatron to get some enough helmets.
It'd be an expensive venture.
Yeah.
To top it off, a new MP Starscream is in the works.
Oh.
I'm sure it'll cost $300. We're coming back from commercial. Spike is busted. He has a front row seat to watch the destruction of the Autobots. We view the battle on a monitor, and holy shit, there's a new character here.
Mm-hmm.
It's Warpath.
If blink and you'll miss it, we get to see Warpath in the first incarnation of him. He doesn't have any lines, but
I think technically Power Glide was already shown, but they'll show him, obviously, he's going to be shown again later.
I don't think he was.
On one of those extreme zoom outs, it's not a very good interpretation of him, but the shape looks right. It's like a faraway shot.
Yep, there it is. Warpath getting
firing from his single titty. Oh, we got popped by Starscream, by fake Starscream. They all got popped. This is a great example of full animation.
Yeah,
the
backgrounds.
And the
Prime
moving.
Says to Jazz, who is kneeling, he says, Jazz, hit the deck. Jazz then stands up and falls down. Fuck.
I guess if he wants, he's like, if Prime wants me to hit the deck, I have to stand up and then fall down again. Okay.
The battle rages at the cliffs. The setup for the showdown begins. The clone Starscream commands the Decepticons, hold your fire, so he can challenge the Prime Pretender to a one-on-one. The loser and his troops must leave the area forever.
I'll take this one. This is the one I want to fight. It picks the fake one, obviously.
There's a bit of a battle.
Yada, yada, yada.
The third-party Prime takes a shot in the shoulder, but ultimately gets the jump on Star Scam and destroys him.
See, this is why there are no intros. You're spending all your time on wordplay within the episode.
This is more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I do like it.
Well, that two-thirds of you.
Yes.
He's just being a jerk for the sake of being a jerk.
What?
I do like the scene where he gets killed. It just happens so quickly. I almost feel it like a real death.
He just explodes.
Runs! Victory is mine!
Yeah.
I don't really find it that cool of a death at all.
And then the wind takes the particles and blows them all away. Trailbreaker is immediately duped. This Prime can't be working for Megatron because he just murdered Starscream in a fair duel.
Yeah.
Right, guys?
So this is another opportunity where they should have had the fake Prime kill the real Prime, but they just don't seem to be able to. This is, again, I think Megatron is just not able to kill Prime because he can't, subconsciously, he cannot live without him.
Yep, I agree.
Fake Prime orders his troops into the ravine, which you remember is full of explosive crystals. And despite the genuine Prime's pleas, the Autobots march towards their death.
Don't follow him.
Fucking lemmings.
At this point, Windcharger emerges from the crevasse and explains that they should not go down there because it is certainly not a death trap. And the only reason he's alive is because he transformed before hitting the crystals. His rubber tires saved him. The second time that's happened in Transformers history. Also, Spike has totally been kidnapped by Megatron. We gotta go save him.
For a second on the tires. So this episode was not written by the same people who wrote A Plague of Insecticons, which was Douglas Booth, where the tires protected the Autobots from Insecticon lightning attacks. Was this show, were these two episodes sponsored by Firestone? Because tires have magical properties in the world of the Transformers.
There's Michelin ads in between.
Yeah. Anyway.
Carbon Coptimus is like,
fuck you.
Fuck Windcharger. Forget about Spike. Follow me and we'll go kick Megatron's thick chrome ass to the next star system. Well, that's that. The real Prime would save Spike with no delay. So they turn and just fire on on the soulless clone, knocking him into the ravine below.
The crystals play very weird, almost pointless role in this episode. I guess they're the, MacGuffin or whatever, but it's just, this episode's very weird, with the plot points and the motivations.
Mm-hmm. And the lack of investigative curiosity.
Yeah. They really want to check out these crystals, but we don't have time to ask any probing questions.
Megatron is mega muddled over the fact that his clone just got canceled. They gotta get the fuck out of here.
So they take off in their mountain rocket.
The Autobots approach the mountain ship thing, and it takes off right before they can reach it. But as the Decepticon ship exits the troposphere, they toss Spike's fleshy tuchus right out the window.
And here we have that infamous line from Prime. Do you want to play it? You don't know what I'm talking about?
The way
he says Spike's name?
All right, let me...
He's dropped Spike!
It's very well delivered.
The way he says it, I don't know if you caught it, Caleb. He says, he's dropped Splick.
Is that how he says it?
Yeah, he says Splick.
That sounded like Spike to me.
No, he says Splick.
He's dropped Splick.
It sounds a little splicky.
All I can hear is splick.
Maybe that's a hint that that is still the Megatron. That's still the clone prime.
I'm sure there's some fan fiction about that. And yeah, here we get Power Glide gets his first, maybe second appearance, first appearance, but it definitely the first line.
The Autobots are horrified at Megatron's action, but luckily, welcome to the series, Power Glide. Yep.
But at the same time, Power Glide kind of toys with Spike. It's weird. Falling.
Yeah, it's weird.
He flies past him, does kind of a loop-de-loop, and then snags him. Inches from the ground, which I'm sure Ryan has things to say about that.
We have talked about that. As long as you don't hit the ground, you can hit anything else, no matter how hard it is, and you're fine.
Yeah. So his body should still be splattered on Power Glide's spine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, imagine Optimus holding out his hand for Spike to fall into. It's actually would probably be worse to hit his hand than the ground because his hand's made of metal.
It's the same thing as like in the Bryan Singer in particular, Superman, where Superman's flying at like 700 miles an hour and picks somebody up out of danger, which he would just have liquefied them and flown straight through them if that were real.
Yeah. Then he pats Splick's head with that big metal hand of his. Yeah. It would like crush his head. I love you, Splick.
We celebrate the return of the real Optimus Prime. It's a little fun. It's a little awkward. Put her there, partner. And that's the end of the episode. Okay.
So the crystals just stay there?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Right. And never to be heard from again.
No.
New voice actors, Warpath and Powerglide, who are introduced in the episode. We'll save Warpath until he gets a proper line and focus on Powerglide, who was voice actor Michael Chane. And Caleb, I am going to share my screen again because you got to see what this guy looks like.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Holy shit.
Wow. Whoa, look at that jacket. That's a fucking awesome
That's
jacket.
Wild.
Yeah, he's a rock star. He voiced Powerglide, Red Alert, Hoist, and Skids, along with Raoul, and also Sir Wigand of Blackthorn from the episode A Decepticon Raider in King Arthur's Court. His 30 episodes of Transformers was actually his most prolific acting gig. His heart truly lied with the quill, dear gentlemen. He was the story editor for 65 episodes of Rambo, the TV series, an animated cartoon about a tortured PTSD-stricken Vietnam War veteran. That's the 80s.
Yeah. For the listener, he looks like Guy Fieri's brother with a leather jacket with tassels
and
blown out hair.
And there's also like daisies or something embedded in the leather jacket.
I want that jacket. That's a badass
it's
jacket.
It's pretty awesome. And his hair looks bleach blonde. He looks a little like a thicker Billy Ray Cyrus.
I wonder if we can find him on social media anywhere. Is he still alive?
I think he's still alive, yes. He was producing something called the Chain Comedy Hour as recently as 2016, but I can't find it anywhere on YouTube or even it's mentioned on IMDb, but I can't find any other evidence of it existing. But the Rambo show, just as a side note, it had voice actors from the Transformers. Transformer alumnus Neil Ross was the voice of Rambo. Alan Oppenheimer voiced Colonel Samuel Troutman. Other notable voices that were on Rambo included Peter Cullen, Frank Welker, Ed Gilbert, and Michael Bell. Also, Jack the King Kirby designed a character for that show.
Hmm.
Back to Michael Chane. For whatever reason, he didn't provide his own voice on his signature television show, but he also wrote for Punky Brewster, She-Ra, Princess of Power, and Police Academy, the animated series.
Wow.
Cool. Michael Chane.
Cool.
Auto Scout, you guys mentioned there are third-party, X-Transbots has a version of it.
Oh.
And also there are companies that make legend scale figures, which are basically small, but really almost like mini masterpiece figures. And there's a Soundwave by a company called Magic Square that has Auto Scout. And then I think, Ryan, you already brought up MP36 Megatron comes with the clone controlling helmet. And so does X-Transbot's version of Megatron that they made that came out way before the official Takara masterpiece did. So now you got that.
Cool.
You want to talk about
In the Real World?
Is In the Real World a stupid name for this segment?
Too late. Okay. This aired October 2nd, 1985. In the American Top 40, we're still in Dire Straits limbo. So I looked at the overall Billboard year-end Hot 100 singles for 85, and I picked out Sheena Easton's Sugar Walls.
Ooh.
Because I love the completely sterile description on Wikipedia. The song is presumed to be a euphemism for the lining of her vagina, which was perhaps sufficiently subtle by itself, but the general content was considered suggestive enough to qualify the song for the Filthy 15, which was the 15 songs deemed extremely offensive by the Parents Music Resource Center in 1985.
I like Sheena E.
Yeah.
She got some good tunes.
Some others that were on that list was Darling Nikki by Prince, Madonna's Dress You Up, She Bop by Cyndi Lauper, and supposedly for violence, We're Not Gonna Take It by Twisted Sister, which is a weird choice. Here's some lyrics. Blood races to your private spots. Lets me know there's a fire. You can't fight passion when passion is hot. Temperatures rise inside my sugar walls.
Ooh, yeah, that's...
That's definitely about a vagina.
Yep. Spent 16 weeks on the Billboard Hot 100 in the States, 9 in the top 40. It reached number 9 overall, as well as number 3 on the R&B chart, and number 1 on the dance chart. It was composed by Alexander Nevermind, a pseudonym used by Prince. Which is like, okay, Prince. I get it. You're weird. It just reminds me of an episode of Unsolved Mysteries with a guy who, this criminal... His pseudonym was Strider Starfire.
I'm sure there's good reasons for pseudonyms. I always think it's interesting what they come up with, and a lot of times they're silly. Paul McCartney did the same thing.
I wonder if there's a legal thing, if it is about avoiding contracts with people that
Possibly.
They don't want to share money with.
So number one at the box office was Commando, which was a number one that we covered this before. So I picked another number one from earlier in the year, which is Witness, a neo-noir crime drama starring Harrison Ford, Kelly McGillis, and Lucas Haas. A detective, Ford, focuses on protecting a young Amish boy who is the target after he witnessed a murder in Philadelphia.
I remember that.
I haven't seen it, but there's a famous scene where Harrison Ford, like a real creep, peeks at Kelly McGillis while she's taking a sponge bath.
Yikes.
Yeah. Reached number one in the week of March 10th. It's interesting because it was number one in the fifth week of its run after being number two for the past month. So, anyway, made $668 million on a $12 million budget. So, not too bad.
It's really good. It's a good movie. I like it.
I haven't seen it. But it takes place, a lot of the filming took place in Intercourse, Pennsylvania, which is formerly Cross Keys, Pennsylvania. It was changed the name in 1814 to Intercourse, and nobody seems to know why. Although this whole county,
Lancaster, it's like the unknown studio.
What's that? Is it?
Yeah,
I don't know what that is.
That's the studio that made the episode we just watched.
Oh, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, where this is, in particular, seems super horny because here's some other town names: Blue Ball, Gap, Fertility, Mount Joy, Lititz, Bearville, and Bird in Hand.
Yeah.
Bird in hand?
There's a lot of repressed.
What kind of bird?
Cockbird.
Right. Repressed Amish sexual expression.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Sounds like you've done your research.
Have you seen Amish Girls? That documentary series on Pornhub?
How come there is no Amish porn?
There's not real Amish. I mean, the people who make the... Although that's Mormon girls. Never mind. I'm sorry. They're ex-Mormons and they make porn.
I'm not expecting real Amish people to make pornography.
There's definitely Amish porn.
I can't believe that there's not sort of that fantasy intertwined.
It's definitely out there.
I'm sure there's Rumspringa porn out there.
Caleb, get your Googles out.
Lastly, in the real world, some fun facts from this week. Rock Hudson died of complications due to AIDS at age 59. E.B. White died of complications from Alzheimer's at age 86. E.B. White wrote Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little, for anybody who doesn't know. Edward Lee Howard, a CIA operative, defected to the Soviet Union. He maintained his innocence until his death in 2002, claiming he was a scapegoat. The oyster-based economy of Florida's Apalachicola Bay...
was devastated by the effects of Hurricane Helene, which stalled in the Gulf of Mexico and killed 90% of the oysters in the bay, which is very sad. Actually, none of these facts were fun.
Sad for my taste buds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a real, real bummer.
That's the real world. Choke on it.
Well, maybe it's time to get into those.
Rip deviations.
There's just a few here. The only script for this one I could find is incomplete, and it's a marked version where Ron Friedman felt it necessary not only to cross out the dialogue, but to redact it with black marker like a CIA report and write his own in there. There is a strange scene in it that doesn't appear in the finished episode, though. During the first fight with the Decepticons, Ramjet drops incendiary bombs around Jazz, Ironhide, and Windcharger, and Jazz says, "Somebody better cool us out, or we're going to need barbecue sauce on our suspension systems," which I don't understand at all.
Yeah.
And then they are rescued by Inferno, who transforms into his fire truck mode and sprays down the flames. The Autobots are, quote, covered with foam, but grateful, end quote. Windcharger says to Inferno, "Remind me to stay out of your way the next time I have a hot date." Another line cut, probably because it makes no sense.
The barbecue one does make sense as I'm
who's going to eat them?
Through it. You don't have to eat them for that joke to make sense.
Of course you do. Why else would you use barbecue sauce if you're not going to eat something?
He's just saying that they're going to be hot. He's just saying going to need barbecue sauce because they're going to be so hot that you might as well slather them with barbecue sauce and eat them.
Like Memphis ribs.
It's ludicrous. It's a ridiculous
it's not,
line.
It's not the worst. There were worse in this episode.
Like, Optimus Prime.
Rate the scheme.
Like all of these, if there's an if-then Excel spreadsheet statement, mm-hmm. where it's like if you had just driven into the crevasse with the fake Prime at the 6-minute mark, or killed the real Prime at any of the three given points where you could have.
Or done your homework on the names of the characters.
Right.
Yeah. I think there was a big missed opportunity here for, it's like using something that can make an infinite number of amazing schemes, but applying that technology to a poor scheme.
He had some baller technology that he can continue to use. The Decepticons still have a cloning machine in their mountain spaceship.
Well, it's again, I go to this well all the time talking about how I use Photoshop in the way of, like, if I had a Ferrari, just driving it down to the driveway to get the mail, like, because it can do so much more. That's the way the Decepticons use their tech.
I don't think this is an original thought. They could create a clone army of Optimus Primes. And send it to Autobot headquarters and just wipe them all out. Because the clone was everything that Optimus was, strength-wise, etc.
I guess the reason behind that, which is never articulated, but in my mind it would be like it's too energy-draining and the material heavy.
We got enough for two clones.
Yes.
So are you going to give it a number?
4.
I'll give it a 3.
I say idea is an 8, execution is a -456.
There you go. That's better.
The only reason this got anywhere, though, is because the Autobots were so idiotic, including Optimus Prime.
Yep.
It shouldn't have gone anywhere if any of them had
asked them a question.
Right.
Asked any questions.
I think the only true winner in this whole episode is Laserbeak. Laserbeak pulled off. Did everything.
Bested Optimus Prime. Bested Starscream.
Yeah. That's it. Man.
MVP.
Laserbeak's an unsung hero.
Yeah.
Also, the little, this is not related to reading the scheme, but the little camera that comes out of his head is very similar in design here more than anywhere of the one in the movie.
I'm the ghost of the iconic movement.
You know. I didn't find anything particularly iconic about this, except the whole "we must have a race" line, because it just has spawned a bunch of memes.
I didn't realize that was a meme until
I didn't either.
The research to this show
in it, but yeah, apparently when two things are similar, so I'm told, we must have a race.
Right, I like that. I thought the fucking helmet was the most iconic thing because it's so silly.
Do they have to wear a helmet? I mean,
it seems you wouldn't necessarily need a helmet.
I like the helmet.
It's even got the little microphone that comes around the side.
I
like
the helmet. Yeah,
it's like a gaming headphone.
Next time on the Autobot Decepticast,
we're going to check in with our good friends at AECOM as the Autobots try to dominate Devastator.
Why are all the Devastator episodes AECOM?
It's true.
Fuck you. All right. We'll hunker down, everybody.
If you'd like to support us, feel free to do so via Patreon, where we've got several levels with several fun bonuses, depending on your decided patronage.
Great. I hope we get some Squarespace commercials.
or visit the APDC store at our website, autopoddecepticast.com, where we've got posters, buttons, all kinds of sundries. Actually, just those two kinds of sundries.
Yeah, and if you're a Patreon member, you'll get that stuff anyway.
Oh, we didn't talk about booty boxes. We're inching so much closer to the booty box line. The boxes are showing up at my house next week.
Okay, cool. I've got some stuff to give you today to take and put in there.
And the art materials are almost done. I'd say we're maybe a month out.
From when? This will come out like the end of July.
We are recording on what, July 11th?
11th.
Okay, a month from July 11th. shipping.
Hey, everybody, shipping. Take that with a grain of salt.
Well, why do we even tell
and
people?
Some of you
I don't know.
And some of you are international. I can't calculate the way these logistics are going to work.
We're going to put it in a bottle and throw it into the ocean.
Yes.
All I know is everything
is not...
I've got a dirigible.
We're going to send it over.
Everything is COVID's fault, okay? Not our fault. We're not procrastinators.
Certainly not us.
We're not slow creators.
We've never not done this before and are just figuring it out.
It's just, I mean, Caleb is on his deathbed right now with COVID. You can't expect us to get these booty boxes out.
Well, I don't know. We're recording this on the 11th. I don't know what's happening when this comes out.
You'll know by tomorrow. We'll give everybody an update.
So I think we'll come out August 3rd, I think, is when this comes out.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm just getting ready. I'm just excited for my test results. And it's weird. It's just weird. I don't know how to feel about it.
We're all going to get it. We're probably all going to die. We live in the United States. Oh. And, you know, we're doing it right when it comes to fattening that curve.
God, yeah. So ridiculous. Wear a mask, everybody.
Yeah, it's easy.
Wow, we're definitely bringing this home on a high note. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Jesus. Google Play, and TuneIn. If you're an Apple Podcasts user, please leave a review. And, of course, interact with us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of them at APODDCast, and the web presence, autopoddecepticast.com. How come .com was never a thing that pornography websites could use?
I'm pretty sure it is. Like, well, I don't know. I believe you can now do any a .dot anything.
I feel like all
jump on that, Aaron.
Of those websites should transfer.
I'll put APDC After Dark.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye. Bye. My Mercy just had a test result.
Everybody, you get to be a part of this moment.
I don't know. It might be nothing. I actually did go to the doctor yesterday for a urology appointment.
And they're like, you not only have COVID, but also the clap.
And all your sperm are still there.
Still there.
Well, I did get a prostate exam. Yeah, I got one of those.
Did you do it because you had some symptoms or anything? Because we're still
Hold on.
Okay, COVID. Drum roll.
I don't know if that's
appropriate. It is not detected. A negative test result for this test means that SARS-CoV-2 RNA was not present in this specimen. It does not rule out the possibility. But it's negative. It's a negative test result.
All right.
They wish they would have sent this to me just a few hours ago. But hey, I just got that's really good news. I got a negative test result.
All right.
Congratulations.
Fucking A. I can hang out with you guys now.
screenshot it and put it on our Twitter. But I will not like it from our Autobahn to Subject Cast account.
It's literally funny that I got that test result right as we're finished with everything, but it is what it is. I guess that's a full circle. That's a well-rounded
circle of session. Life.
Brew of Cells is the sponsor of Autopod Decepticast. Yes, 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 yes.